want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third
Patriots
score. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2005 NFL season.
Go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
That I missed my cue right from the very start. I missed my cue. Unbelievable. 2007 season. See, we rate nothing but the best inside Patriots Playbook. Absolutely nothing but the best. Nothing more than, you know, the absolute finest in production and facilities and everything going on. Right, Gary?
You happy to be back. Line your ass off.
Yeah, there you go. Happy to be back with you for another edition and another season of Patriots Playbook. Right here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook, and as we're talking about with Fred and Andy and Tom, where was Paul today, by the way? Was he doing EEI stuff? I don't know. This is the seventh season for Patriots Playbook. Normally, we do take our hiatus, our off-season, immediately upon the conclusion of the Patriots season. And, of course, PFW guys continue with one day a week, kind of bringing you up to date on everything around here because, hey, they work here in the stadium. They produce, you know, Patriots Football Weekly. So they're in a position to do that. But we're happy that we can add a little bit more during the season. And traditionally, we've always started right after the first game. And seeing as the first game is in the books, the Patriots had a rather resounding 38-14 win over the Jets on Sunday. We are here with Season 7 of Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. And like the other guys, we're here with you Tuesdays through Fridays. We're in a live version of the show from Tuesday through Thursday, and then we replay the best of on Fridays for you. And, of course, Friday is also part of Patriots Friday on 890 ESPN in Boston. So you hear a lot of that programming during this time frame approximately as well on Fridays. But nevertheless, we're here during the middle of the week, and we're here to get you not only taken care of and sort of wrap things up in a nice, neat little bow from the previous weekend's game, whether it be a Saturday or a Sunday or a Monday. That's why we're usually here, you know, on Tuesdays. But we also start to take our first look at the next week's game on Tuesday. And then, of course, we spend predominantly Wednesday and Thursday's shows doing nothing but previewing and looking forward to the next game on the schedule. We do also spend some time on this program. For those of you that are first-time listeners, you've never heard this program before, or maybe you've kind of heard it on and off over the course of the last six seasons. Again, this is year number seven that we've had this program as a part of Patriots.com Radio. But we also spend some time looking at other games and other issues and other news items from around the NFL, especially those particular instances, games, news items, what have you, that affect or indirectly affect the Patriots. Now, and on Thursdays, we will be joined this year once again for, I think, the fourth or fifth year in a row by Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN.
Baxter!
Yeah, he'll join us on Thursdays. And if you've listened to our program at all in the years past, this guy is, what's the best way to, he's really kind of, you ever watched that show Stump the Schwab on ESPN? Howie Schwab, you know, the guy that knows everything. Russell knows everything about the NFL. He is the human computer when it comes to the National Football League around ESPN and ESPN.com and ESPN Radio and everything that is ESPN related to the National Football League out of their Bristol, Connecticut headquarters. It all runs through Russell. And he takes 30 to 40 minutes of his time on Thursdays to give us his insight, not only in the Patriots and their upcoming game, but also we take a quick look around the league and we preview the matchups, whatever week is coming through, and he will take your emails as well. So that's coming up on Thursdays. Wednesdays, primarily, we'll spend our time looking at the opposition. We'll talk to members of the media. We'll also listen to some of the interviews that we have, not only from the Patriots locker room, but the conference calls that are conducted with members of the Patriots media, with the opposing team, players, and coaches are involved. And we will play that for you on Wednesday shows. And the one thing that I really like about this particular program and this format and doing this for you here from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time is that we can do more long-form programming. We can play things in their entirety. We don't play just snippets or sound bites, although we have plenty of that too. But we can play it, and you can hear the questions from the media themselves, and you get the full context of what's being said. So you're going to have the understanding for yourself, and you can make the decisions as to what is appropriate, what's not, what's a good question, what's not. You know, and you become, therefore, a more educated fan and follower of pro football and, of course, the New England Patriots. I like to think that, you know, if you listen to this program from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on weekdays, you get a little bit smarter. There's nothing wrong with saying that, is there? Either that or you get a little bit more brain dead. I haven't quite figured that part out yet. But at any rate, that's part of what we do. Tuesdays, like I said, we will recap a little bit more on what happened the previous week and talk about some of the between-the-lines issues. And, of course, we've got a couple of those that we will get to here in a bit artifacts from the win over the Jets on Sunday. But we'll also start taking a look at the Chargers simply because of the enormity of the game, week two of the season, and you got the two teams going at each other who were in the AFC semis last year, and the Chargers thought that they should have won the game, felt like they should have won the game, and the Patriots beat them, and there's some, you know, bad blood, ill will, what have you, even though the coordinators and head coach are gone from the Chargers. You know, it's still largely personnel-wise the same team and whatever. We've got all week to build that up, and we will do that, in fact, a little bit later on. You can always email me what is on your mind, whether it has to do with the Jets game or the previous week's game, or if it has to do something, a question with the upcoming game, or it has to do with an issue surrounding not only the Patriots, but around somebody else in the National Football League, whether it's the Pats, their upcoming opponent, a previous opponent, or maybe it's another, hot news topic. Conversationally speaking, I mean, honestly, I wish that I had the opportunity to speak with you a month ago when the whole Michael Vick story was breaking down, because it was an issue that went beyond just the X's and the O's and just the issue of playing games. And obviously you have your own opinion on that, and I'm not going to really delve back into that at this time. But that's the kind of thing we'll tackle. When that stuff happens during the course of the season, we'll tackle it here inside the playbook. Because I do believe that anything that happens of a national newsworthiness, it certainly indirectly affects the Patriots because of the Patriots being in the NFL. I mean, let's face it. It affects all of us as fans, as members of the media, you know, as team employees, whatever. It affects us. So we will be dealing with those topics here on the program, and yes, there will be plenty of interviews. Like I said, we'll have members of the visiting team's media. On occasion, we'll also visit and interview members of the Patriots media who you read either online or, you know, in the newspapers or hardcover or what have you. We'll get them in on the program. We'll get their thoughts, and you'll have an opportunity not only to send them emails, but you can call in live just like a regular talk radio program on your local radio station wherever you may be listening, and you can call in and talk to these folks as well. You'll have that opportunity. But mostly what I want to do on this show is I want to hear from you. Now, there have been some of you who I'm sure have been dedicated listeners who have been with Patriots.com Radio since its inception, who have been with Patriots Playbook and this particular program since its inception in 2001. And, of course, I think Patriots.com Radio only began a year or two before that. So, but we came in 2001, and this is our seventh year. And, you know, and a lot of you have emailed me during the season every year. And I'm really looking forward to reconnecting with you and finding out not only how your summers went, but what's on your football mind at this stage, and what can I help you with, what can I answer, what can I give you an opinion on, how can I help you enjoy the sport, how can I help you become a little bit more informed or entertained or what have you. That's what it's all about. We're all, yes, we are all football fans here. I may work for the Patriots. I may be a member of the media. I may do my journalistic due and play it down the middle as best as possible, you know, on a Sunday when I'm covering a game. But here in this particular forum, I am a team employee, but I will call it as I see it. And I will give you some thoughts on the whole Spygate thing that's going on with the Pats here in a couple of moments. And I'm sure that you still have your own thoughts as well. And I know that the PFW guys between today and certainly through the Patriots Monday yesterday from the WEEI guys in Boston that, you know, plenty of that opinion has already been shared. You may, however, not have had a chance to get your 2 cents worth in on it. You may not have heard whatever is transpiring, and so you might want to be kept up to date because you may have not have paid attention to your computer. It's quite possible you were away from the computer, even though the show continues to stream, because you like to listen to it while you're working. Quite frankly, that's the overwhelming number of you that listen. A lot of great feedback in the last few years from those of you who sit and listen to this program while you're at work, and it helps pass the day. Great. Happy to have you. Welcome to the program. Glad you're a part of it. Make sure you fire off an email every now and then, you know, whenever there's a little lull in the action in the office, and let me know what's going on and what your question is. And if I personally can't answer it, I'll find somebody that will answer. That's one thing that I will promise you here on the program. So we got media members. You'll hear from players. You'll hear, you know, from fellow emailers. We'll take your phone calls here on the program. We'll jump into it, and we'll try to have 2 hours of pure football, both on and off of the field, throughout the 2007 season. And, of course, we look forward to the playoffs in 2008 as well. Because I think we all realize, based on what we saw on the field this last Sunday, that's a fait accompli. I'm not going out on a limb here. I think you know it. The Patriots know it down the hallway. The PFW guys know it. Heck, even Gary knows it. We're going to get ready for the playoffs. It's a little ludicrous to really talk about it at this stage of the game. I understand that. But this is a team that will be in the playoffs. If it's not, then this season is a catastrophic failure. That's all there is to it. Catastrophic failure. Now, we don't know what will happen over the course of the next 15 weeks. God forbid somebody get, you know, hurt. Knock on wood. I'm doing that right now. Reverse double whammy. Get rid of the jinx. I'm very superstitious when it comes to things like this. Very, very superstitious. I think most sports fans are. I have to sit and just away. If there's a good play, then I don't move. I just don't move. You know, if I got my hand propped up against my face, you know, or I'm leaning on the couch or on my chair at home, if there's a good play that happens, when that happens, then I don't move until the next bad play happens. Then I change positions. You do something that, do you have a superstition you follow? That's a good thing that we can kind of get out on, at least to open up. We'll talk about all kinds of crazy things here on the program, both with the Patriots and just in a general footballdom sense. webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. It's the same email address as it always has been here on patriots.com radio. I have the email inbox right in front of me. I have the computer right in front of me. I am waiting for you to send your emails and your questions and your comments one way or the other concerning the Jets game, looking forward to the Chargers game on Sunday, or yes, against, you know, Spygate, Camgate, whatever we're calling it now. But with the Patriots-Jets photography issue from this past weekend as well. Web radio, it's all one word, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, if you want to do this talk radio show style, it is open, it is available to you. For those of you that have the minutes, use them, 508-543-7482. Same telephone number as PFW in progress. Same number that we've had for the last 6 years, now into seven. Area code 508, and the number is 543-7482. 7482. So there you go. Now that we've sort of set the table and reacquainted ourselves with you, let me... Oh, by the way, are we podcasting again this year, Gary? We're podcasting, too. How do you like that? So if you miss a show on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, you can always download it for later playback on your iPod or MP3. How about that? Is that not great? Isn't technology wonderful? So you don't have to miss a single edition of Patriots Playbook. And, you know, we will tell you when we get guests lined up for a Tuesday, a Wednesday, or a Thursday show, and we'll kind of do what is known in the business as a tease, because we want you to listen. We want you to pay attention. We want you to, you know, follow along. Why? Well, because we think we give you good product here. I mean, you got a lot of choices to make when you're surfing the web, right? You come here because you're a fan or a follower of the Patriots and or the NFL at large. I mean, we do get a lot of opposing team fans listening. Why? Because we're the only team that offers this kind of daily live programming. We're the only ones. A lot of teams stream things on their website, but it's press conferences or some video thing, clips or what have you. But they don't do live radio programming like the Patriots do, and we do here on Patriots.com radio. That's why we call it Patriots.com radio. We're the only team that gives that. So we do get a lot of opposing fans as well, and I welcome opposing viewpoints on this program. I do. I want to hear from Chargers fans. I want to hear from Jets fans. And when you come up on the schedule and your team comes up and get ready to play the Patriots, I want to hear from you. To any Steeler fans listening, you all suck. No, you don't. You don't suck. Gary loves to throw that one back in my face. That was from an email I read a few years ago when we got ready for the Steelers. And I say we in a collective we. I don't suit up. That ended for me back in junior high school. Basketball was my sport of choice, and, you know, only because I was one of, shall I say, I was one of those late maturers. Hit puberty late, okay? All right? There, I said it. That's just the way it is. I was 5 feet nothing when guys were already 6'2 in the locker room. That's right. It's true. It's happened. It's taken me all these years to come to grips with that, too, I think. So, but we digress, and we do that often here on the program. Let's get back to the issue over the camera and whether or not I have to admit I'm kind of at a loss for really I'm really kind of at a loss for knowing where to kind of file this. And I will tell you, it's only because when I first saw the story yesterday that I believe Chris Mortensen broke on ESPN.com. And, of course, has subsequently been handed up and followed up by not only members of the media here in Boston from Mike Reese at the Globe, and I believe who from the Herald is on top of that? Oh, yeah, John Tomasi. He had an article in this morning's Herald. I know that ESPN has continued to follow it as well today. I have to admit, my first impression was, and please, if your first impression was anything different, I'd really like to hear from you here, but my first impression was what? Who cares? 38-14 was a significant butt thrashing. So how could that have possibly made a difference? In a close game, you might find it somewhat plausible, but if you know anything about football, if you know anything about what goes on down on the sidelines and the conversations that happen between coaches and upstairs in the box and downstairs and the choreography that it takes and the struggle that it takes, you know, with people talking over people, if you have ever experienced a professional sideline in a football sense, then you will know, as I do, that it is just damn near impossible to turn around something like is being portrayed here, a signal from a Jets coach being filmed and turn it around in order to be able to use it in a very short amount of time against the team that you're shooting. Now, this is not an excuse. I'm not saying the Patriots didn't do something. But I just find it, I think I'm a little incredulous about it all. First of all, I just don't see how they could decipher it and turn it around and use it on Sunday. And turn it around that quickly. I think that's just damn near an impossibility. If you know anything about what goes on the sidelines and who is on headsets, there's 85 guys talking at once. It's like the Big Show on steroids, you know, on EEI. Everybody talks at once.
So, you're making my point.
There you go. It's hard to do. Now, I would buy the fact that maybe, just maybe, if this is this alleged occurrence happened, and again, we don't know yet for certain, but if this did happen, I would buy that they would, if they did this, then it would have been for something on down the line, say the next matchup for the Jets. That I could find a heck of a lot more plausible. If it was indeed Brian Daboll, who is a former Patriots coach and employee, who blew the whistle on the Pats, well, naturally he would have some knowledge of that having happened in the past between him and Eric Mangini. Maybe this is just their way of kind of, you know, flicking their nose back up at their former employers. This is all part of gamesmanship. And I also find the fact that if the Patriots actually did do this, why they would flaunt it? Why would they be that open about it? I'm like, you know, if they're gaining anything beneficial from it, why would they do it? I heard a great analogy of what this whole thing is like earlier today. And the analogy was this whole story, this whole situation is like when you take your wife to the beach, okay? What do you do when you take your wife to the beach, you know? You probably, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't look at the other pretty girls in bikinis up and down the beach or whatever it is they're wearing, but you probably look at them through shades, right? Sneak a peek every now and then. I think we all realize that that's allowable. But, you know, if you're pulling out your camera and you're taking photos and saying, honey, hand me that telephoto, or, you know, can you clean the lens for me while I shoot videotape of that fox? Well, you know, that's just downright disrespectful, and it will probably get you in the bleep house with your wife anyway, right? And that's how I look at this whole story. I really believe that's a great analogy for this entire story. We all look. We all catch a glance. We all might look the other direction. There's nothing in the rule books of the National Football League that says you can't kind of look at the sidelines and watch the coaches do what they do. Now, unless you've worked for a team, you don't have any idea what those hand signals mean. And I don't know if you know this or not, but generally those hand signals change from week to week. So unless someone's spilling the beans from the inside of an organization, you don't really know what those hand signals mean. You don't. I don't. You don't. Gary doesn't. PFW doesn't. The players don't know. Former coaches don't know. They might give you an educated guess. You might get lucky and guess right. Chances are you won't. This is not an excuse. I am not making up for the Patriots if they cheated. And I think that's a little bit of a harsh word. And I know that there are a lot of fans and a lot of teams around the NFL now who are thinking, you know, well, the Patriots need to get their comeuppance here. You know, fine them. Strip them of draft picks. Let's nail them to the wall. Bastards win too much. You know, we'll be the evil team now. You know, in the eyes of, if we haven't already been, you know, the bad guys, we will be and we are going to be. And, you know, we're becoming that now. And PFW asked right at the end of their program about a half an hour ago, you know, with one of the callers that they're calling the show, you know, are you okay with that as a Patriots fan? As long as they keep winning, as long as they do everything, you know, within their power to keep a competitive team on the field, are you okay with that as a Pats fan? And that's my question to you. I want to take that a step further. If whatever is alleged to have happened, happened, worst case scenario even, if it happened, as a Patriots fan, are you okay with it as long as they keep winning? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. If you want to call in, you can talk about that, and we'll get into that. But that's one of the questions. Now, the latest on this comes from Mike Reese of the Boston Globe. And they briefly talked about this during PFW, in case you're just logging in and tuning into the program. Mr. Kraft, Patriots chairman and CEO, commented on these allegations that someone was illegally spying on the Jets' sideline to decipher their signals. The quote is, there's an investigation going on now and perhaps an adjudication of it, and I think it would be inappropriate at this time to make any comment. A question was asked about Kraft having pride in his players, and before the question finished, Kraft then said this, I think what happened Sunday, I know a lot of fans are excited about this upcoming season. I know our family and organization is very excited. When you're successful in anything, a lot of people like to try to take you down and do different things. We understand that. We have a lot of people who work very hard. I think you heard some of the players speak about it. Yeah, in particular, I will tell you that you've probably seen or even heard the quotes from Ellis Hobbs. He said, I don't know about you, and I'm paraphrasing what Ellis said over the last couple of days. We work way too damn hard around here to cheat. We don't do any cheating. I don't know about you, but nobody I know cheats. And that paraphrasing is what Ellis Hobbs said, I believe, yesterday. And I tend to agree with that. Those guys are way too busy with taking care of their mission, man-on-man mission, to worry about who's stealing signals from somebody else. Now, if you know anything about the history of the NFL, you know that the Jets whine. The Jets fans always whine. They're some of the biggest whiners that exist in professional sports, much less the National Football League. I don't know why they whine, but they do. Maybe it's just it's their New York nature. I don't know. I'm not from New York. Don't want to be from New York. I like going to New York for visiting, but I like working in New York from time to time. But Jets fans whine. They really do. And so maybe this is just whining. You got beat 38-14. Man up. Suck it up. It's time to move on. You got another shot at the Pats. Bring it later this season. Okay? That's really the extent of it. Now, if the Patriots did do something illegal, especially if they did something illegal that they've been warned about in the past, which is alleged as well, then yes, the Patriots should be punished. I will not skirt that issue. I don't know how they should be punished. It's not for me to decide. I will tell you that based on the early track record of Commissioner Roger Goodell's
reign over the NFL, that I would tell you that I would imagine he will come down hard on the Pats. He will probably issue a significant monetary fine. There will probably be a loss of a draft pick or two. I do think that depending upon the severity of what is discovered to have transpired, that the loss of a first-round draft pick would be unusually harsh. I've already heard that maybe a first-day draft pick could be stripped, which would lead me to believe a third-round pick, maybe a fourth, but probably a third. I just think that, you know, it depends on how deep this goes, and we don't really know until the NFL does its supposed investigation. Now, I would also be frankly stunned, knowing as you know as a Pats fan, and knowing as I know as a Pats not only employee but as a member of the media, that this team and this organization plays everything very close to the vest, right? I mean, let's apply a little logic to here. Let's apply a little Pats logic based on what we've known to have transpired since Bill Belichick became head coach of this organization. We can even take it a little bit further, maybe even since the Crafts have owned this team. We know that they don't like telling stories. They don't like giving things up. They like keeping their cards right in close to the vest. They don't show their hand. They don't like talking about injuries. They don't tell you about injuries. They don't give us anything more than they absolutely have to. They don't offer up opinion. Bill Belichick's pat answer is, well, I can't do anything about that. I'm just worried about coaching the team. I can only coach the players that are here. How many times have you heard those two comments? A million? Maybe more? Well, of course. And you'll hear it more. That's just the way he is. It's the how they act. It's how they operate. We've long since been used to, you know, our own local version of, you know, Pravda around here. That's just the way it operates. Of course, then again, we're also the only team that streams live radio programming and gives you opinions like this. So who in reality is Pravda? They're not shutting me up. They don't shut up PFW guys, and they write the team publication. They allow us pretty free reign around here, and I think that signifies what kind of organization, you know, this really is, in all honesty. And so we're left to disseminate what the team is making available in terms of information. That's fine. And, you know, we're free to you know, throw out our conjecture and our opinion, and that's what it is. It's opinion. We try to base our opinion on facts as we know them, but it is still just opinion. I mean, nobody knows 110% of the story, maybe except for Coach Belichick, maybe except for Mr. Kraft, and one or two other choice individuals. And that's really it. The rest of Mr. Kraft's quote today concerning the very latest on Spygate, Videogate, whatever what we're calling it here, says this. He says, I can tell you, I get in sometimes at 7:30, and the bulk of the team is there, and they're not leaving until after 7 or 8 o'clock every night. I'm very proud of them and what they do. We're looking forward to a very exciting season. I hope it continues this Sunday night with our opener. He was asked if he feels the team is an unfair target because of their success. Mr. Kraft's quote today. I don't know if we're an unfair target. I think Carl Jablonski knows. Carl is the Shaw's president. He was at a Shaw's supermarket function today. Or Stop and Shop supermarket function today. He says, when he leads in the supermarket business, everybody wants to eat his lunch, so they either want to cut his prices or take business away or whatever they can do so that they're on top. We understand that. We know what it was like when we bought the team and how we felt about it. We worked very hard to try to put an organization together that we all could be proud of in New England, and we're very proud of the New England Patriots organization and the record that they've established over the last 13 seasons in one game. And Mr. Kraft was finally asked when he expects a verdict. But he said those questions had to be directed toward Commissioner Roger Goodell. He was also asked if he's spoken with Coach Belichick over the last 36 hours about these allegations. And Mr. Kraft ended with this today. He said, I have a lot of conversations with Coach Belichick, and he's working very hard in putting a game plan together to hopefully beat the San Diego Chargers. That's what is important to me, and I think it's important to our fans. So he answered that in true Belichickian form, did he not? Do you have any particular take on that as all? You know, any kind of opinion on what Mr. Kraft had to say today? And that, again, comes courtesy of Mike Reese in the Boston Globe from just a short while ago. So what did we learn? Nothing. We're all aware of it. Yeah. Bosses are aware of it. Uh-huh. Did something happen? Maybe. What's the likelihood the Patriots just kind of tweak their noses at the Jets, you know, in the sake of rivalry, or at the NFL in the sake of, well, just tweaking a nose, because we know how they've handled the injury report over the last few years over what the Patriots think is a silly policy. I think that there's probably some truth to that. You know, my mom once told me that no matter how extreme a case or a story may be, the answer is always somewhere in the middle. And I think we'd probably all best take heed of that particular somewhat trite saying, that the answer here is somewhere in the middle of the extremes that you have heard described. Did the Patriots do something? Maybe. Did they do it on purpose? Maybe. Did they purposely cheat to gain an advantage to win that game? I personally highly doubt that. Did they basically thumb their nose at the Jets and the NFL and the quote-unquote establishment, the man? They might have. And I suppose that the investigation the NFL will be conducting after they confiscated the camera and whatever was allegedly in that camera is examined. No truth to the rumor, as I understand it, that that confiscated and kicked out person was Brian Lowe, right? No truth to that at all. It was not B-Lo. So, at any rate, I welcome your thoughts if you have not had the opportunity to give them here on the program. Does this, I'm going to, just for argument and for conversational purposes today, again, my quote-unquote email question of the day to you, and I usually try to come up with an email question of the day every day here on Side Patriots Playbook, in addition to whatever else is on your mind. This is really just, it's all sort of open line, open forum. Whatever you want to talk about is all fair game, and I'll read the email, most of them will read on the program. But even if I don't get it read here in the program, trust me, it gets read here. And we do decipher it, and if we can squeeze it in, we do. We do try to read everyone on the air. And if you want to just pass along a personal note not to read on the air, just say so. All I ask is that you send it, you know, and do it, you know, when it comes to mind, and then sign your name and where you're writing from. We like to keep track of that kind of thing around here. But, you know, who you are, and where you're writing from. And that's it. No other details really necessary unless you want to provide them. It's entirely up to you. But our email question of the day is, let's assume the worst. Patriots cheated. Let's assume the worst. The Patriots got an untold advantage over the Jets. And they've done this before. Let's assume the worst. Does this change your opinion of the team? Does this cause you to think differently about your New England Patriots? What are your thoughts? Webradio at patriots.com. That's the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. We'll take your emails. We'll take your phone calls. We've got some news and notes to get to, not only from the Pats, but from around the NFL. After week one, great stuff to get to. We'll start talking about it coming up right after this.
Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season. Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren? Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardians poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autograph poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
This is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriots specialty license plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
John Rook back inside Patriots Playbook in our inaugural program for the 2007 season. Glad to be back with you for year number 7.
Woo-wee!
Yeah, baby, inside the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. And wouldn't you know it, our first program of the year, and we're already having internet problems. Maybe it's because we've had so much response to the show that you've caused the server to crash. Hopefully we're still streaming. Am I talking to nobody? Maybe we need to find out. Anyway, we're experiencing some internet difficulties at this current time. I know that a few of you have already emailed. The problem is I can't open the emails because everything's frozen here. So what I would ask for you to do is, if you have a comment that you know requires immediate attention, to just pick up the phone and do it the old-fashioned way. 508-543-7482. That's the way to do it. 508-543-7482. We are still on the air, right? Okay, so we're still streaming. The problem is, though, is that our internet site has gone down, which is also includes the email. Great way to start out a new year, wouldn't you say? Maybe it's the Jets. Maybe this is their way to get back at us, huh? After what I just said. Whiners.
Okay. At any rate, we'll get the problem hopefully cleared up here momentarily. So if you do have a thought, hey, by all means, like I told you before, we'll read everything. Whether it gets on the air or not, it gets read. But if you have some thoughts on our email question of the day, go ahead and fire it off, and then that means when we do clear up the problem, it'll just boof right through, like, you know, the whole bottleneck thing. In the meantime, you can certainly call at 508-543-7482. And while we take a couple of moments here to see if we can't figure out what it may be, being the problem here in terms with our computers, let's take you back to Coach Belichick as well, who had, you know, his thoughts not only on the opening week win over the Jets, a few not so, shall we say, right on things about Spygate. He didn't really address it in his comments, and obviously you wouldn't expect him to because I'm sure that's, you know, not in his domain. You know, so you know the drill around here. That's just the way it works. But did talk about the Jets as well, and also getting back to work this week with the Chargers looming. Here's head coach Bill Belichick.
Okay. Well, it was good to come out of New York yesterday with a win. That was thought a good win for a football team. Proud of the players. Thought in all three phases we played competitively, and you know, some things to work with and build off of. We got a long way to go. And I think there are a lot of things that came up in the game that we need to correct and talk about and work on. And some of the things we had problems with, I'm sure we'll get from other opponents that we face down the road. And so, you know, that'll kind of be our focus today, is to go over the tape and, you know, make sure we get all the things corrected that we need to. And, you know, and just move along. It's one game. But for our first game, there was some positive things, and we'll certainly try to build on those and try to keep moving in the right direction. So that's got a lot of work ahead of us. We've got a long way to go, and we know we're going up against another real good team this weekend, so we know it'll be tough against San Diego.
Bill, I know you say that the first game is often different than other ones just because there isn't maybe the full body of work on the other team and everything else. Did you feel like some of your success was based on it being the first game and maybe you guys doing some things the Jets hadn't seen before?
Oh, I don't know. I think there was probably plenty of that on both. You know, we were scrambling around on, you know, a lot of adjustments there even in the first quarter, you know, on both sides of the ball, you know, and on special teams for that matter. You know, they used several different alignments on there in the kicking game. And so, you know, I think that's just, like I said, I think that's part of opening day. But, yeah, we were doing plenty of it. Maybe they were doing it too. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But, you know, there were a number of things that we saw yesterday that were new, that were a little bit different. But that doesn't surprise me that showed up. You know, we just had to, you know, talk to everybody, make sure that we got on the same page and, you know, try to adjust to them.
Do you send the message to your players not to read too much into how dominant they were yesterday and quickly get rid of it and put it
away? We got plenty of things we got to work on. Yeah, I think that's obvious. Well, as we go through the tape, it'll be even more obvious. You know, some plays that there were some things right on the play, there are other things that weren't right, and sometimes those things got exposed, sometimes they didn't. But in the end, we need to tighten them all up. So that's what we'll work on.
On the punt, can you explain what Willie Andrews did wrong to warrant the flag?
He went out of bounds.
He was the first person to touch it.
He was. Mm-hmm. And they changed that rule now where it, instead of it being a 5-yard illegal touching penalty, if it's inside, then it goes back out to the 20. So, no, I thought the play was ruled correctly. That's the way they explained it during the game, and then after watching it on film.
They explained it to you because I didn't hear it on the app.
Yeah. Jeff came over and explained the call. I think it might have been in the next series or whatever, but, you know, but that's what I thought happened. Yeah, no, I thought after looking at it that it was the correct ruling on the play.
The breakdowns in communication in terms of getting the different packages on the field. Like, there was at least one time where a timeout was called to get the right personnel, and then one where you didn't have any timeouts left, and one was trying to be called to get the right personnel. Where was the breakdown from that?
Well, there's a couple of different situations, but, you know, ultimately it's getting the right people on the field for the call, and sometimes if you're trying to match up with them, you know, understanding who they have out there, which sometimes isn't totally clear as to what grouping they have out there. And then depending on whether you're trying to substitute a group or whether you're just trying to substitute a player for a player and not a whole group, then sometimes there could be a little miscommunication on that. So, you know, there's a number of things involved there, and, you know, it's something we need to tighten up on. Well, as a tackle, you know, you play on the end of the line. Anyway, so that puts him closer to that position. And we thought it was, you know, the best way to set up that part of our attack for the Jets.
That was a Jets-specific decision.
Well, that's who we played this week.
But it's something going forward. That's something.
We'll do that on a week-to-week basis. Maybe not.
Case of having him just be an extra blocker in certain situations, or was there possibly he might catch a ball? I mean, I know he has to check in because he's a six, you know, there's already five offensive linemen. So was it just a case of having him be an extra blocker?
Well, he's an eligible receiver, so yeah, he'd be eligible in the passing game. I mean, I'm not saying he's a guy we'd want to feature in the passing game, but he would be an eligible receiver. You know, it's somebody that potentially they'd have to cover.
That's what I mean. When Mike Vrabel comes on the field, most of the time, you know, the ball is going to come to him, or he's out there to be a decoy that the ball might come to him.
I think so. If you talk to him, he wouldn't agree with that. But yeah. Yeah, he's an eligible receiver just like anybody else is. So certainly he's more of a blocker than he is a receiver, but. You know, could we have plays that we could throw him the ball to? You know, I suppose we could.
Is he advanced? Good catch?
He's got two, yeah. Well, they're not game tested yet. We haven't game tested them.
Going forward, will Hansa be holding from Guskowski, or is that just something you did maybe yesterday?
Yeah, we'll maybe talk about that.
Had he done a lot of it?
Yeah, Chris has held before.
Mm-hmm. Bill, what separates Moss from a lot of the receivers in the league as far as what he does that makes him so good out there?
Well, I think Randy's, you know, his skills are pretty well identified. You know, he's a smart player, he runs well, catches the ball well, makes good route adjustments, so. He's got a number of things going for him.
Bill, now that you had a chance to look at the film, how did Adalys Thomas acclimate himself to the defense?
Well, I'd say the same thing about Adalys, and I would say probably about all the players on defense. There were some plays that were good, some players that could have been better. And, you know, again, the Jets gave us some different looks on some things we reacted to and identified probably the way we should have, other things we either didn't identify correctly, or maybe there's a little, you know, the call defensively, we could have been in something a little bit better than what we were in, so it's a combination of things. But, you know, I think overall it was, you know, he did some good things, some things are okay, there's other things that, you know, we need to work on, but I would say that for every player on both sides of the ball, for that matter.
So he didn't look, you know, out of place out there.
I certainly wouldn't say that, no.
When you saw Ellis catch the ball 8 yards deep in the end zone, were you thinking knee?
Well, you know, it doesn't really matter what I'm thinking. You know, the players are out there playing, and they make the decisions when they're out there on the field. So, you know, I think Ellis made a decision that he thought was the best one at that time. Worked out okay, so that's good. I think he's trying to make a play. What I would encourage the players to do, what I always encourage them to do, is try to make a good play. So it turned out good. So
Bill, you were
special teams coach, though, was there a rule that you used as far as just the for a kick returner, if you're this deep, you know, don't take it out, or maybe...
I think you have general guidelines on everything, but, you know, I don't think there's necessarily a hard and fast rule.
Is there a case where a guy with, who made a decision that turned out well like that, it could be pointed out to him that it wasn't turned out to be a bad decision, even though through circumstances it worked out okay?
Well, again, I think every play is a little bit different. Every kick's a little bit different, you know. And I think if you've ever coached special teams in this league, you would know that just because a ball comes down at a certain place, that all kicks aren't the same. You know, hang time's involved, which I'd say is a big factor. So, you know, you tell me whether you'd rather handle a ball that's 3 yards deep in the end zone with 3-7 hang time, or handle a ball that comes down on the goal line with 4-2 hang time. You know, it's not the same. It's not the same. There's a yardage difference. There's also a hang time difference in kicks, and each one's different. So,
was it different?
And the coverage is different. The return's different. So, you know, there's a guideline for play. It's like handle the ball inside the 10-yard line. I mean, you know, you can say don't catch a ball inside the 10-yard line, but it's 5 second hang time. You got four guys standing behind her on the goal line. The ball comes down on the six. I don't know how smart it is to let it hit and bounce down to the two. You might be better off catching it on the six. So I think that every situation is a little bit different, and players make decisions because they think they're the best decisions they can make. I'm not saying they always do it. I'm saying all the coaching decisions are the best ones, but you do what you think's in the best interest of your team and for that play at that particular time based on circumstances in that instance. So that's how I would answer every question. That kickoff, ones that are down, ones that are returned out. It's, you know, just like Kevin Fair catching that first punt on, what was it, the nine? I thought it was a good decision. Some people might disagree with that, but those are decisions that players have to make in that situation, and they're all different. I think if you've been around the kicking game in this league long enough, you know that it's hard to have a hard and fast rule and be right every time. You can have a rule, but I don't think you're going to be right every time.
Would you say it's different from punts to kickoffs then? Because I know on punts, sometimes they say, you know, put your heels on the 10 and don't back up. Or put your heels on the 5. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you can put your heels on the 10 and you can have a hard and fast rule. And I'm just telling you, if the ball comes down on the 9-yard line with 5 seconds hang time and there's four guys standing on the goal line waiting to down it, I think it would be dumb to get away from the ball, let it hit on the 9, and roll down to the 1. I mean, I don't think that would be a good play. But you can have a hard and fast rule, whatever you want. And you can tell your returner on kickoffs, if the ball's here, run it out. If it's there, keep it in. But I'm just telling you, all kickoffs aren't the same. You want to have a hard and fast rule, you can have it. I don't think it's necessarily the best one to have. But I'm sure that there are some people that have a clear cut like that, and that's fine. That's the way they want to do it.
So you said you thought that Kevin's decision was good. Do you also think Ellis's decision was good?
I said that every decision that the player makes is based on the situation, the circumstances on that particular play. That's what I said. I said I think there are general guidelines that they follow, but I think that each play is different and every situation is different. I think that the player should do what he thinks is best on that play. I think that's what Ellis did. Okay.
You thought it was a good decision?
Said I thought that Ellis makes that decision just like Kevin makes it. Okay, so if it's a gray area, if it's a situation that could kind of go either way, then you count on the player to make the. The decision that he feels like is the best one. I wasn't standing back there catching it.
On the Heath Evans, before he scored the touchdown, the challenge, was that your challenge or was that up in the booth from
that? No, it was my challenge.
And what did you feel was the benefit of challenging that play at that time, just to go through that?
Well, I wasn't planning on using the timeouts the rest of the game. And it looked to me like, I looked at the coaches upstairs, that it looked like he was in. And I think looking at it on the film this morning, it's real close. I think he still might have been in. But I wasn't going to use the 3 timeouts. I thought that there was really nothing to lose. The clock had run down to the 2-minute warning anyway. And so instead of having 3 timeouts, we had 2 or 2 and 1, whatever it was. I can't remember how many I had at that point, but I didn't feel like we were going to need them. And I thought that when the coaches saw the play and after I saw the play, I thought there was a chance he might be in, so we took a shot at it.
Is there a benefit to that, like everybody going through the process, you know, the coaches upstairs relaying to you, so that in another situation where maybe it's more important, everybody knows what they have to do and how, you know, and the limited amount of time you have to do it to get that challenge in?
Well, that may be, but that wasn't the reason for it. I mean, the reason for it is just, you know, you're just coaching the game competitively and trying to make good decisions, you know, whatever they are and whenever they are. And that was one that, like I said, I just didn't think there was anything to lose in that situation. And it was, you know, it was a safe call to make. And we didn't get it. We lost a timeout. Given the score and the situation in the game, I don't think those timeouts were that important. So... But it wasn't done for practice for another game. It was done because, you know, we thought it was a challengeable situation.
What did Junior say when you told him you wanted him to line up at fullback?
Really, he told me that he wanted to line up at fullback long before I told him that he wanted to line up at fullback. So, Junior and I talked about that last year, but then this in the spring, you know, we're talking about goal line. I forget how it came up, but I think he actually brought it up, you know, that he had played fullback, and if we need a fullback on the goal line, he was available. And you know, we've used those guys before. You know, we've used Brian Cox and, well, Russ is an offensive lineman, Richard. You know, we've used other guys back there. And but I think Junior's, it's kind of a natural fit because that's kind of what the linebacker has to do on defense is you kind of got to see the hole on the goal line and get in it. And that's sort of what the fullback has to do when he's trying to see the hole and get in it and probably most likely meet the linebacker there. So,
is that kind of also part of, you know, you guys using this, and now the fullback position, the true fullback that used to be used in the eye is kind of gone. Is that a way that coaches kind of replace that old traditional fullback at this point? Because, yeah, I mean, I guess with roster limits and everything, there are ways to maybe replace that position without actually having – that maybe Lorenzo Neal type on your team.
Yeah, well, I think it just depends on how much you're going to use that player in, you know, in a game. And, you know, you think about how many plays on the goal line are you going to have, and if you can find a player that can do that rather than carry a 45th player to the game just for that one specific situation, then that allows you to bring somebody else. And same thing with the tight ends. You know, we only carry two tight ends in this game with Ben and Kyle. So if we were ever going to be in a three tight end set, whether it's on the goal line or out in the field or whatever, then rather than carry a third tight end, we, you know, in this game used Mike and Ryan in those roles. And then that enabled somebody else to play somewhere else for us. So, you know, Heath can play fullback in our regular stuff. And he could also play it on the goal line, which he did. And he did some in short yardage too. Or we can use him as the back and use somebody else, you know, if he's not the fullback. So, you know, no matter what you do, you got to have another guy anyway, because if somebody, you lost a player, then you'd have to still find a way to do it. So no matter who your fullback is, you have to have somebody else. No matter who your three tight ends are, you're going to have a fourth guy there somewhere so that you would be able to, you know, move whichever three are left, you know, to be able to run the plays that you want to run there. Unless you just want to junk it, but that's, you know, that's not really a good way to go into the game where you have a formation and you have no backup for it. And then if, you know, one guy's got an equipment problem, then you're out of the whole thing. And that's, you know, I don't think that's usually where you want to be. So somebody's got to back it up anyway. Okay.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from Gillette Stadium earlier. And I'm happy to report as we roll along now into hour number two of our inaugural edition of Patriots Playbook for the 2007 season. My name is John Rook. The internet is back up and running. So, yeah, baby, it's all back now. It's all good. Bugs have been fixed, so your emails may come in. Some of them have arrived. There is every bit the possibility that it may not have, but, you know, if you have a wonder about it, then send it again. If not, you can get right through. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We'll read a few of those. Got some other things that we want to get to, because I know the whole video gate, spy gate thing has been beaten to a pulp over the course of the last 24 to 36 hours. It is continuing to remain a story of some national stature. It may experience a bit of a lull following today until Commissioner Goodell and or his NFL minions rectify the situation by pronouncing a sentence or coming up with some kind of a conclusion as to what specifically did happen down on the sidelines. I know that the investigation is still ongoing. The story was updated just a short while ago, in fact, within the last hour by Chris Mortensen at ESPN and ESPN.com. He originally broke the story yesterday that, of course, upon the confiscation of the video camera and the tape from a Patriots employee on the team's sideline during the game against the Jets, the tape and the camera placed in a sealed box, forwarded to the league for investigation. That has not had any sort of a conclusion to it. The statement from NFL spokesman Greg Aiello was that the rule is that no video recording devices of any kind are permitted to be in use in the coach's booth or on the field or in the locker room during the game. Clubs have specifically been reminded in the past that the videotaping of an opponent's offensive or defensive signals on the sidelines is prohibited. We're looking still into whether or not the Patriots violated this rule. Basically, it's a repeat of their original statement. Member of the competition committee has also been quoted as saying it's not their first time, talking about the Patriots, violating this particular rule. This member of the competition committee did not wish to be identified, however. So there really has nothing been added to the equation from the NFL's standpoint. And so I guess now, until we get to that point in time, we'll kind of move on with things as they are in looking back not only on the Jets but looking forward to the Chargers. You know, I gave you my opinion in the opening hour of the program. I really believe this is nuts. I don't know why the Patriots would have such the audacity to out and out cheat and then flaunt it. I mean, I think the Patriots have a little swagger in their step, don't you? I think they've earned it. I think the Patriots have a right to maybe have their nose in the air a little higher than other teams around the league. I think they've probably earned that too. But I don't think the Patriots are out-and-out cheaters. I do think the Patriots like to tweak their noses at certain individuals, if not organizations. And I think we've noted that here through the years, whether it comes to reporting injuries or what have you. And I think that there's probably a little bit of a couple of things going on here. And as I told you earlier, I really believe that the answer is always somewhere in the middle. It is never one extreme or the other. So if you haven't had your chance to give your thoughts on the particular subject, you can certainly fire those off. I will also deal with some other football matters today, but we will touch on the news items of the day as they occur. I will also tell you that there have been some trades in the NFL today that I will tell you about. A brief update on player of the Buffalo Bills, Kevin Everett, the tight end who had his neck broken, for lack of a better phrase, as well in the loss to the Denver Broncos on Sunday. So I'll bring you up to date on that here in just a moment. In the meantime, let's read some of the emails that have come in. First of all, Irene in Tampa. Nice to hear from you, Irene. She says, John, what a pleasure it is to hear the voice again. It's been a long off season, although it was a productive one for our team, obviously. I am tremendously excited about the Pats this year. I missed the first part of the show, so excuse the following question if you've already addressed it. I realize that this is a question better suited for later in the year, but I am curious as to who you think will make the playoffs and eventually win the Super Bowl. Well, we aren't going to jump ahead of ourselves here, Irene, but I did say off the top of the show that I think it's all a fait accompli. Based on what we saw this last Sunday, the Patriots are in the playoffs. This is a playoff team. It should be a playoff team. It will be a playoff team, pending, you know, unmitigated disaster, injury-wise. It's a playoff team. I think that the Patriots should be the favorite to go to the Super Bowl. I will stop short in saying they should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl because there's just way too much time between now and February or the end of January. I personally am uncomfortable in stepping out and saying that. I've always been more of a – I always try to look at this a little bit more from a journalistic point of view. But, yes, the Patriots should be a favorite. I think you realize that. I realize that. I think all of professional football realizes that, which is part of the reason why we've had this uproar over, you know, Spygate, Camgate, again, whatever we're calling it here, you know, Jetgate. I the Patriots kicked the Jets' butts up and down the field. They thoroughly thrashed them. I'm still waiting for the Patriots' offense to get stopped by the Jets' defense. How many times did they punt? Once? Yeah, once. So, you know, the Patriots only stopped themselves on offense. That Jet defense either is really bad or the Patriots' offense is scary good. And again, the answer is probably always somewhere in the middle. You never go to one extreme or the other. I don't know which part of the middle it's in, but it's somewhere in the middle between the two extremes. Always, always. So in that regard, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I do think that the Chargers will be there. And I tell you what, the Chargers coming back and winning that game after being down 3-0 to Chicago into the third quarter on Sunday, that was big. Because the Chargers, I was happy that they won, because you didn't want to get an 0-1 Charger team in here on Sunday night looking to go 0-2. You didn't want that at all. I thought that would have been a little bit more of an uncomfortable position to be in. That being said, I think the Chargers are one of the best teams in the AFC. I do believe that Pittsburgh is going to bounce back and bounce back very strong. I realize that they whooped up on a Cleveland team, and I think Romeo Crennel's days, if they weren't already numbered, they are now, which is unfortunate, but unfortunately that happens in this business. But I think Pittsburgh is going to bounce back strong. In spite of losing last night, I think Baltimore will end up being a player. I think Cincinnati, based on their win over Baltimore last night, even though it was in Cincinnati, I do think the Bengals will end up being a player. And obviously, I'm not forgetting the Colts. I'm just saving who I think is the best for last. The Colts will obviously be a major player, and stands to reason that the game in November will be there'll be quite a build-up for it this season. Whether we win, and that's, again, the collective we here, the Patriots win, or whether the Colts win, has no bearing whatsoever on who's really the best team ultimately at the end. That will only be decided once the playoffs start. But I think I've already talked about four or five teams right there in the AFC that are right now better than any team that the NFC has to offer. I mean, I actually thought last year, to be honest with you, Irene, I really thought last year that the NFC was beginning to make some inroads and that the NFC was getting a little bit better and that they were closing the gap, that there were a couple of NFC teams that could be within the, maybe top five in the AFC. And I don't want to paint a broad brushed picture here after just 1 week out of 16, or actually 17 when you count the bye week, that are played in an NFL season. But if you do jump to conclusions, and I know we all do, the NFC's, they're not very strong. Like I said, right now, I think I listed five AFC teams that are stronger than any team in the NFC. Saints fell flat against the Colts. The Giants have no defense. The Cowboys might be potentially good. They've got a pretty good offense. I mean, it was a 45-35 game against the Giants. Again, consider the opponent, number one. The Eagles were disappointing. The Bears, they ended up losing 14-3. I mean, Rex Grossman still can't get out of his own way at quarterback. So, I just think there's too many question marks amongst the teams that are allegedly good teams. Here's the team in the NFC that I think could end up rising above it all, if not one of the teams that I already mentioned. And I think any one of those teams is probably as good as another. Carolina. We got a chance to see them, obviously, in the preseason. They didn't play very well against the Patriots. But I think Carolina, based on, some of the experience that they have, and if they can stay healthy, I think Carolina's got as much of a chance as any one of those teams that I just mentioned to be there to represent the NFC at the end of the year. So I hope that somewhat answers your question, Irene, but that's how I kind of look at it, at least through 1 week of play. We'll reevaluate after a couple of weeks and see how this thing goes along. Kenneth sends this note, and Kenneth, I appreciate your note. He's a Patriots fan in Huntington Beach, California. He says, I asked the guys at PFW this question, but they'd already beat over the Spygate issue so much I think they were tired of it, which is understandable. I haven't even barely talked about it, and I'm already tired of it. He says, a comment on Tomlinson's remarks about the Patriots. His words were that the Patriots live by the philosophy that if you're not cheating, you're not trying. He seems to have a serious beef with the Pats. Is that just the emotional response of a sore loser? The reaction of a person who's bought into an anti-Pats feeling because they dominate the league? Or do you feel there might be legitimate reasons for him to feel that way? I've always followed the Patriots because they put forth a true integrity, work ethic, everyone is a team attitude. Lots of people hate them, especially over here in Chargers territory, but I've always just believed that it's because they've proven hard work works. Finally, I'm hearing a lot of people saying it's okay because everyone does it. Well, I'm really disappointed to hear that. If something is against the rules, it's against the rules. Just because everyone is doing it doesn't mean it's okay. I don't think the Jets had any chance at all, but the Patriots didn't have to cheat to win. Cheating is cheating is cheating is cheating. It's wrong. Why would we even try to excuse such an action? I mean, if everyone was involved in dogfighting, does that make Vic okay? Sure, the severity of the crime is significantly different, but if you don't respect the little rules, then the big rules become a problem. Well said, Ken. Well said. Now, I'm not passing judgment on the Patriots yet. I just don't think that anyone should try to excuse that cheating is okay. All that matters are facts. If the Patriots broke a written rule, that's wrong, whether everyone is doing it or not. At the same time, we need to wait and see what really happened before passing judgment. He says, I'd rather have an 0-16 team with integrity than a 16-0 team without. Thank you, Ken. That was the question that I asked. And that's the question I want you to answer today. Worst case scenario, how would you feel about your New England Patriots if they're guilty of all charges? Guilty as charged. Can't answer that. He'd rather have an 0-16 team with integrity than a 16-0 team without. Appreciate your honesty, Ken. I appreciate your honesty. If you have your thoughts on that, webradio@patriots.com. All right, Jack sends this note, and he says, oh, my God, we cheated. Oh, please, grow up. There are a ton of forums calling us cheaters and how typical it is of the Patriots, blah, blah, blah. Did all these morons with their short memories forget when Miami did the exact same thing to us? And to top it off, one of their players was bright enough to go on ESPN and brag about the fact that they had the footage of our play calling. Were they fined? No. Were they damned? No. Did they lose draft picks? No. This is yet another overblown issue that happens everywhere but is brought out against us in a light that makes it look like we are the only team in the league who isn't straight and narrow. Come on, be real. Nobody on this team beat up a stripper, shot anyone, got multiple DUIs, killed a few dogs, or any other colorful news items, but let's make it seem like we're Team Satan. Get over it. That's from Jack, and I appreciate your 2 cents, Jack. Let's go to Benjamin. Ben in Vermont says, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the Pats salary cap. How much room do they have? Do you see that turning into any more extensions this year? How do you see them eating up cap space? Love the show. Glad to have you back. Glad to be back, Ben. Thank you. Well, in all honesty, I do not know the answer to your question. We'll see if we can figure that out. In fact, I've already fired off an email to see if I can get some of that information for you. I think it largely depends on whom, as the season progresses, they deem they want to bring back. How much, for instance, Ben, let me give you for instance, how much do they want to put into re-signing Asante Samuel? You know, Samuel is going to have a certain number of clauses in his contract that if he meets, the Patriots have agreed to not strap the franchise tag on him for next year again, even though technically they're within their rights to do that. So I think a lot of it depends on what kinds of incentives certain players who are, you know, in their cap option year, shall we say, reach. And if they do, well, is it still worth it for the team to re-sign them? That all eats into the salary cap. So I don't know that there can even be an accurate number at this stage, but we'll see if we can't find that out for you. And we'll go from there. I appreciate the question. I just don't want to give you wrong information. And quite frankly, I don't even know that I have a ballpark figure for you at this stage of the game, simply because I don't know where they stand on some of these issues in terms of the potential for re-signing. Because like I said, there are a few players on this team that I believe they meet some incentives. We don't know what the Patriots are going to decide, you know, 17 or 18 or 26 weeks from now. Whether or not they feel like it's worth it to bring that particular individual back or let them go. If they let them go, well, it, generally speaking, not going to eat into their cap. They might take that money and apply it someplace else. Makes sense, doesn't it? Bill says, good afternoon. I thought I would stop in to hear the latest on this whole Spygate affair, and frankly, I'm disheartened by it. Clearly, this takes away the luster of recent accomplishments in Sunday's opening day performance. We've all played sports, and I know everything is driven by money, but to openly cheat after apparently having been warned, as were all 32 teams, just reeks of arrogance and, frankly, stupidity. I, too, have read Mr. Kraft's comments, and I would say one hand does not know what the other, speaking of Belichick, is doing. Bob, please reread the memo. No taping the other team's coaches. Who is this cameraman? Who does he answer to? The buck has to stop at the top. Bill, you're dead on. You're absolutely dead on with your comments. I, too, as a fan, am somewhat disheartened. I do, however, fail to believe that either the coaching staff or the organization is as arrogant as would this issue on its surface appear to make the Patriots seem. I won't believe it. And you're right. It is very, very stupid if it happened exactly like, I don't know, Jets fans would have you believe it happened. Or anybody else who's an anti-Patriots fan from elsewhere in the league. That's just stupid. Makes no sense. And you know this team is smarter than that. They didn't win 3 Super Bowls in 6 years without being smart. I really believe that, you know, is there arrogance attached here? Sure. Stupidity? I really doubt it. Therefore, again, I'll go back to what I originally said. The answer is always somewhere in the middle. And my guess is that there's a certain amount of tweaking the nose at the establishment going on here. And stoking the fires of this whole Pats versus Jets rivalry within the AFC East. Sure, absolutely. It's all part of the sport. It's all part of the game that's played. I mean, you realize that the game does go beyond the chalk lines, right? The game goes to the sideline, to the press box, to the owner's box, to the media, to the fans. It goes everywhere. The game is played in many different venues. Sounds like a line from John Facenda in NFL Films, doesn't it? The game is played in many different venues. it kind of does. You know, well, it's true. It absolutely is true. And so the game is played off the field as well as on the field, which is the whole point that I'm making here. And I think the Patriots are the ones that try to play it as well as anybody. Obviously, they've played it on the field as well as anybody over the last 6 years. And they're playing it off the field as well. And maybe some people aren't prepared for that. Now, if the Patriots are guilty, as charged, then they deserve, you know, you do the crime, you do the time, right? That's just the way it is. And I think we, as fans and as media and as followers of the team, would expect nothing less. I'm sure that whoever this camera person is, I can't imagine someone holding on to their position, but who knows? Stranger things have happened. Stranger things do happen every day. Your job, my job, any job. You never know why somebody is kept or why somebody's let go. But I would also agree with Bill's assessment that the buck has to stop at the top. You know, Mr. Kraft, you know, and the Krafts, they're ultimately responsible for the entire organization. They put people in place to do their job, and when the people they put in place don't do the job or violate the rules in trying to do their job, then obviously somebody has to answer to that. I'm sure this will all iron itself out in due time, in due course. In the meantime, it's all speculation. It's all opinion. And we'll share that with you as we get it, as the situation warrants, and as you bring it up, and as you know, as other news items from around the league, you know, come to fruition here inside Patriots Playbook. That's what we do. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Email, telephone, it's all here for you. In worst case scenario, if the Pats are guilty as charged of anything in Spygate, does that change your opinion of the team? Does it change your love for the team? Does it change how you look at your New England Patriots? If it does change your opinion, how so? That's what I'm looking at right now in terms of a question of the day, email question of the day. And we're going to take a quick little break, and then we'll come back and look at some of the superlatives as well from week one for the Pats. I think you know what they are, but I also want to get into some of those because, quite frankly, I don't want to ignore the fact that it was a 38-14 win over the Jets on Sunday.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season. Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren? Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardians poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
This is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriots specialty license plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything. Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Yeah, baby.
Thought I'd throw you a bone.
Thank you very much. First day back. Got to throw me at least one bone, right? Little Texas fight action just to kind of lift us up here as we get ready for the last half hour of the inaugural Patriots playbook for 2007 and the 2007 football season. Longhorns romped over the Horned Frogs of TCU 34-13 this past Saturday. It was tough, though. It was 10-0 at halftime. I know. Yes, I am a Texas grad. I'm a Texas Longhorn. I bleed orange if you cut me. That's the way it works. Cut me, Mick. I did mention that there was some news around the NFL, and there were a couple of trades in the league today. We mentioned Romeo Crennel and the Cleveland Browns, and how they got shellacked by the Pittsburgh Steelers this past Sunday. And I believe that this could be best described as a last-ditch effort to build for the future and remain a part of that future if you're Romeo Crennel, because the Browns today traded starting quarterback Charlie Fry. Yeah. Now, remember, he was benched right before halftime of the season opener against the Steelers on Sunday. Traded today. NFL Network's Adam Schefter reporting that the Browns are going to receive a sixth-round draft choice from the Seattle Seahawks for Charlie Fry. So how does a guy go from being a starting quarterback to worthy of only a sixth-round draft choice? Wow. Teams apparently have an agreement in place. But the deal has not yet been finalized. If it is becoming finalized, Fry will be dealt less than 48 hours after playing poorly and being pulled in the second quarter by Romeo for backup Derek Anderson in their 34-7 loss to the Steelers on Sunday. Does this open the door for Brady Quinn? Well, of course it does. Browns, by the way, also signed quarterback Ken Dorsey, who was cut 10 days ago by the team, to a one-year deal. So Dorsey will also be in there as a potential third quarterback. So that was certainly one of the big trade stories today. There was a, and that would, I guess, qualify as a good trade story. Lesser trade of sorts has also been made today, as Seahawks defensive end Bryce Fisher was benched by his team after starting for a couple of seasons. He's been traded to the Tennessee Titans. Fisher's a seven-year vet. He had been replaced as a starter for Darrell Tapp, who was a Seattle second-round draft pick a year ago. He is the second former Seattle player the Titans have added since June under Mike Reinfeld, who's their new general manager, after he worked as a personnel executive with the Seahawks for 4 years. So Titans picking up Bryce Fisher is what it looks like here. The other issue today that is making news has to do with the finality, I guess, of the agreement between the Oakland Raiders and Jamarcus Russell. You know, for the fact that it took the Raiders all of the preseason, all of the time since the draft back in April, and the first week of the regular season to get this deal done is an absolute joke. And if I'm a fan of the Raiders, I am boycotting that team until Mr. Davis decides to take a hike. The man is senile. The man and whomever is working for him cannot clearly operate in present-day NFL-dom. Give me an argument against that statement. Can you provide one? What have they done? They made the Super Bowl, what, 3 years ago? By default. By default, I will argue. At any rate, before I get off on another tangent, the deal was Jamarcus Russell and the Raiders agreeing in principle late last night, in fact, to a six-year contract that will guarantee him more than $30 million. It's the richest contract ever for a rookie. Why did it take them this long to do? This is one thing that I will never understand. Now, Russell is scheduled to fly today from Mobile, Alabama, to Oakland to sign this contract and attend practice for the Raiders tomorrow. But there's the very latest from the NFL and NFL Network, is that after a negotiating session that went till about 1:30 in the morning this morning, the deal was still not finalized. Russell's representatives are reviewing the contract language. They want to go over it with Russell and his family. But when it is signed, it is expected to be 6 years, and the Raiders will have a two-week roster exemption for Russell until they have to decide to either, you know, punt him or punt somebody else, one way or the other. Don't think they're going to punt somebody who's going to be playing for about $60 million. $31 million of it guaranteed, apparently, after the contract is approved by the NFL. And we're still waiting to see if the official announcement comes today, but that's the very latest on Jamarcus Russell, the number one draft pick of the 2007 NFL draft by the Oakland Raiders. This is a wasted year. It's a lost year. I mean, if the Raiders do end up, you know, struggling, as you might think most of this year, I mean, if you're fortunate, you might get him in at quarterback in sometime in the second half of the season.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Not the Raiders anyway, right? Thank you, Joe. It's always good to have Joe Namath join the program, by the way. So you'd have to think that, you know, the earliest the guy would contribute would be sometime in what? Late October? If you're lucky, maybe he gets a couple of starts late in the year after the team is already mired in a, 2-10, you know, tailspin. Who knows? It's a lost year for the guy. If I'm Jamarcus Russell, yeah, I'm rich, but then, man, is the scrutiny put on your head now. And if you don't produce right away, you know, the fans are going to jump on you. The media is going to, everybody's, you're in a no-win scenario. Now, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he'll laugh all the way to the bank, especially if he has, what, $31 million of this guaranteed. Okay, fine. But if you want to have any longevity in the NFL, I mean, I realize players play for money, but they also play for championships. And I think Jamarcus Russell and whomever is representing him made a very large tactical mistake. Eric Metz is his agent. Early on when they just said, you know, we're laying out. You got to find a way to get this done if you're operating in the best interest of your client. It's in the client's best interest to get out there and play because he can start at quarterback for this team. He's not going to for at least a while now. Did he get his money? Maybe. But he's not helping himself, his career, or his team right now. And so you're automatically going to be on the hot seat. You're automatically going to be under the gun. You're automatically fighting criticism. Look at me. I'm criticizing the fact it took so damn long to get the deal done. Excuse me. So, in that regard, where is the plus here? Where is the positive aspect to this story? That you got him in camp should have been done 3 months ago. Everybody else got their picks in. Everybody else followed the formula as to how much money pick number such and such should get. But the Raiders, unfortunately, operate under a different scenario. They have to still operate under the thumb of Al Davis. So in that regard, that's where the Raiders will continue to try to get off cheap by hiring a 30-year-old guy like Lane Kiffin. With all due respect to Lane Kiffin, you know, he was hired because he could be hired. And the Raiders didn't want to pay for an experienced coach. And they didn't want to go through another retread. Maybe this is a good thing. Maybe getting Lane Kiffin's a good thing because he's not a retread. I just don't think you'll see the Raiders competitive anytime in the overall scheme of things anytime soon. Don't see it. And you know what? They deserve it. If you're going to operate cheap, you're going to be cheap. That's the way it works. I do also want to bring up the story of Kevin Everett, the young man obviously tied in for the Buffalo Bills who took the neck injury against the Broncos and obviously suffered a major cervical spine injury, I believe it has been called. And there is some serious question as to whether or not he will be able to ever bounce back from this. Could be a quadriplegic, maybe, you know, who knows? We don't know. Still too early to say. They may not know for another, you know, 24 to 48 hours, maybe even take a little bit longer than that once swelling goes down. But I know that, you know, being a team that we see twice a year, the Bills being in the AFC East, I think that you and I and anybody else who, you know, has the heart of a human, your thoughts have to go out to Kevin Everett and his family and the Bills organization because nobody likes to see this happen. This is a byproduct of a violent sport. I think everybody realizes that. But when someone gets hurt, it should just cause you to stop and think for a second and think, A, how lucky you are, B, how lucky we are here, and C, how lucky the Patriots are. This could happen to any one of them. It could happen to any one of us. It happened to him. So I'm sure that you'll take some thought, some time, if you haven't already, to pass on your thoughts to the Bills and say a prayer for Kevin Everett. I think it's appropriate in this regard. I know that Bills teammates have already visited Everett, even though the Bills have asked the team members not to. But a few of them already have because they just don't want to stay away. And I think that is a wonderful sign of support. And I know that if you go to the Bills website in particular, you can send a personal message of support to Kevin Everett and the organization. And, I mean, there's no reason we can't support them in some form or fashion with just a quick little email or a message or the signing of an internet board, even though we're, you know, foes on the football field. So, at any rate, if you care to do that, I hope you take the time to do that. But there's still nothing new technically to report in terms of Kevin Everett's prognosis from the injury on Sunday. I certainly would be remiss if I did not speak somewhat about the overwhelming success on the field on Sunday with everything else that we've been getting to. We've talked about Spygate. We've hit some of the, you know, the news items of the day around the NFL as well today, which we will do here inside the playbook. But, you know, obviously two significant performances that stand out above all others, one being Ellis Hobbs' longest kickoff return in NFL history. And who amongst us, when he fielded the ball to open up the second half, if you had a chance to watch the game, who amongst us did not go, no, 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 yes, yes, yes? I mean, really, right? So, I mean, I did that. I watched the game with my 12-year-old son, Austin, and that was both of our reaction. What are you doing, you numbskull? Why are you running? Oh, go, go, go. You know, so that's exactly how we reacted. And, of course, now Ellis Hobbs has a piece of the NFL record book with a 108-yard return. The other significant performance on Sunday has got to be Randy. 9 passes, 183 yards for Moss in his debut in a Patriots uniform after struggling through the preseason with his hamstring injury. I particularly like the 51-yard pass from Brady in which he split triple coverage and ran right by everybody. It's just rather remarkable. And again, I looked at my son, and he looked at me, and we're both going, oh, my God. What do we have here? It's almost indescribable. So that kind of performance continues. When you have him stretching the field, and you have a guy like Wes Welker, who I do think will end up being a very popular target for Tom Brady this year, two of the newcomers in the receiving corps as compared to last time we had a chance to visit on this very program, then I think you realize the potential for greatness that this offense truly has. Welker underneath, Moss deep, Dante Stallworth and Kelly Washington somewhere in the middle. Certainly when Troy Brown works himself back to health, you know, he might be a factor. It says something about a team when your leading receiver from a year ago is a cut. Of course, I'm talking about Rishay Caldwell. Led the team with, what, 61 grabs a year ago? Nowhere to be found on the roster now. Now, he didn't particularly stand out, I think you probably realize, during the course of the preseason. But, I mean, you know, you'd have to think that, you know, hey, I lead the team in receiving one year. I got a pretty good chance of making the team the next, even in spite of the additions the team makes on offense. Well, no. That's how powerful this offense is and can be. And I'm sure there's room for growth. You know, Tom Brady had a 146.6 passer rating, the third highest of his career against a Jets defense that I was surprised did not blitz as much as it did. He was barely touched. I remember, one hit on Brady, even though he had gotten rid of the football. I think it was the only time he hit the ground all day on Sunday. 22 of 28, 297, 3 touchdowns. Completed almost 79% of his passes on Sunday. That was the fourth highest completion percentage of his career as well. The 51-yard touchdown pass to Moss in particular, the 150th touchdown pass of Brady's regular season career. And he now joins Grogan and Bledsoe in the Patriots annals as the only quarterbacks to total 150 or more touchdowns, you know, since the birth of this franchise in 1960. So, all significant to note. The 51-yarder also was the 102nd touchdown catch of Randy Moss's somewhat, shall we say, star-crossed NFL career thus far. His 20th career touchdown reception of 50 yards or longer. And he got one in his very first game as a member of the Patriots. I hope that bodes well. I have every reason to believe it will. And it's got to – I mean, when you think about if you're an opposing defensive coordinator, it's going to give you a long week of preparation when you get ready to play the Pats, is it not? Wow. Lawrence Maroney and Sammy Morris is a 1-2 punch. I think at the very least, my impression is that they are an effective tandem. When you throw Kevin Faulk into the mix as the third down change of pace back, I think the Patriots won't miss a beat with Corey Dillon's retirement. And I actually like Sammy Morris. I think he runs a little bit tougher between the tackles than most people realize he can. I think he has more speed around the edge than most people believe he has. He's got a great quality about him. There's just a certain, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, a little something-something, right, about Sammy Morris that I think can give him a little bit of an edge. And that makes
you know I don't speak Spanish.
Sorry. Didn't mean to throw that one in there on you. You know, I think we can still kind of look at Lawrence Maroney and say he is not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination. He still doesn't quite get to the hole the way he needs to in the offensive line. There's still a little bit of a misdirection there that, you know, if he just hits the hole hard and attacks it, he probably gets more yardage. Although we did see a little of that in the opening drive of the ball game. I mean, first time the Patriots since 1997 scored on the very first drive of the season. Got a touchdown. 91-yard drive, and they score on the first drive of 2007. So the first time they've done that in, what, 10 years, which is great. Great way to start the season, no doubt. However, you know, it's still going to be a work in progress. You don't want to be in midseason and or playoff shape in week one. You do want to have something to build up to. And so if you really need to look for a worrisome tidbit of information when it's almost darn near impossible to find it at this stage of the game, then you want to look at, you know, a team that might be, you know, hitting on all cylinders a little bit early. And I think you want to make sure that you continue to play it as close to the vest as you can, because, you know, you want to be able to save a little something-something for teams on down the line. I don't know, say, oh, the Chargers this week, or, I don't know, the Colts in Week 10 or whatever it is, you know? So that will be a situation that bears watching, but obviously an outstanding start. The fact that the defense played at least as well as it did without two of their best players, in Richard Seymour, who's on the PUP until through week six, and, of course, Rodney Harrison, who is serving his four-game suspension for substance abuse violation. You know, there's so much to get to, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it, even though this is all news that has transpired over the course of this team over the course of the last week or two before we came on the air with the program today to start a new year. And I know this has all been talked about ad nauseum on PFW during their weekly programs up until this week, where now we're going daily. But it's, you know, the fact that this team started as well as it did, missing two huge pieces of the puzzle, also bodes very well. So in a pure football sense, after the first week as a Pats fan, I don't know how you could complain. I don't know where you go from here. You start so well, it's almost as if there's no place to go but down. And I think that, in and of itself, concerns me just a little bit. Now, you do have the Chargers coming in this Sunday. Sunday night game, NBC, national television, right? Big night, Sunday night football. The entire football world will be watching on Sunday night. And, you know, Gillette here will be rocking. No doubt about it. Stadium will be rocking. Fans will be on their feet. Everybody will be ready to get after those big, bad Chargers, because you know they're going to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder based on the playoff loss to the Pats last January. And I'd be really surprised if there was a whole lot of conjecture about last January leading up to the kickoff on Sunday from the players. Certainly it's not going to come from the Pats, but if LaDainian Tomlinson actually opens his mouth, if Sean Merriman opens his mouth, if David Rivers opens his mouth. Excuse me, David Rivers. Played basketball. This would be Philip Rivers. Thank you. See, already got basketball on the brain. Happens every once in a while. I suffer from CRS around here. Antonio Gates, I don't know if that he's got the personality to do that. Tomlinson's probably the likely candidate there. Somebody will ask Merriman, too. But, you know, you've got a new head coach as compared to the team when they played last January in North Turner. Got two new coordinators on the offense and defensive side. So, you know, they've basically been handed a championship-caliber team, and it's basically going to be up to them not to screw things up, not to mess things up. So I think that will be largely where a lot of the focus, pregame focus, should be going into the game on Sunday. After all, this is week two. This is not going to be a death knell for either team. Both teams are 1-0. The loser is 1-1. Big deal. It's not going to hurt either team's ultimate playoff chances. Now, if one of these teams are 0-1 going in, I think we know the history of teams that are 0-2 getting to the Super Bowl. It's really not very good. Maybe that's just, you know, a quirk of history, but it is a fact as well. But they don't have to worry about that. And I do think that the Patriots, even though the Chargers, when do they come in here? And I'm thinking this just off the top of my head. When did the Chargers come in here and beat the Pats? Was that 3-4 years ago? And throttled them, as I recall. Drew Brees was still a quarterback. I remember that for the Chargers. Was that 2004, I want to say? I'm sure we can find that somewhere. Gary's going to look it up in the book because I don't like to sit here and thumb through the book while I'm talking to you because then it just doesn't make for very good radio. But I know that, you know, the Chargers won't be intimidated by coming in here at all. And the Chargers will be playing with a bit of an edge and a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, as I mentioned. And, you know, whether or not they use last January as motivation or not, fact is that they know that they are one of the best teams in the league and they can play with this team and they'll be in here trying to fight for a win. It was 2005. Thank you. San Diego came in here in week four and throttled the Patriots on October the 2nd, 41-17. So, as you'll recall, that was a rather bleak day. And yet, the Patriots, that was a year the Patriots ultimately lost in the second round of the playoffs, lost to Denver. So that was 2 years ago that they were beaten by Drew Brees and the Chargers. So the Chargers won't be intimidated in here. So maybe we just, you know, hey, let's just play football and see what happens. But, you know, some of that extra little off-the-field stuff, as I talked about a little bit earlier here on the program, is going to get mixed up into the matter. It's always going to be a part of the game within the game. Be interesting to see how both locker rooms handle it. Now, of course, tomorrow we'll hear in the program here inside the playbook, we'll go into the Patriots locker room and get some of their thoughts on practice this week and preparing for the Chargers, and you get a chance to hear all of that here on the program. And I believe tomorrow we have the gentleman from the San Diego Union Tribune, Kevin Acey, is that who is? Yep, Kevin Acey, who covers the Chargers beat for the San Diego Union Tribune. He will join us on tomorrow's program as well. So we'll find out how the Chargers are getting ready to prepare for this organization starting tomorrow. And then, of course, if not tomorrow, certainly part tomorrow and then into Thursday, we'll have the conference calls. Guest would be Norv Turner of the Chargers will take part, and my guest would also be LaDainian Tomlinson of the Chargers would take part. So you'll get a chance to hear from those two gentlemen as well. Focal figures, to say the least, in this Sunday night's matchup. So the intrigue, the interest, it's picking up, right? Absolutely picking up. The buzz is here. You got to be feeling on the field right now. You got to be feeling pretty good about where this team is after week one. I mean, even those diehard, ardent Patriots fan had to be just a little bit taken aback by the performance on the field this Sunday, right? Alejandro, hello, John, chiming in from Bogota, Colombia. Nice to hear from you, Alejandro. Says, good to have you back. I wish you a very good year in the web radio. I appreciate that. It's always good to have good luck. Thank you for taking the time to write us, and thanks for streaming us today where you are in Bogota. He said, when Adalys Thomas was acquired, thought he was going to be a playmaker coming from the edge, so I'd like to ask you what kind of an impact does he have in the middle? As I could see on Sunday, the main beneficiary was Vrabel, who spent a lot of time in the Jets' backfield, but I'd like to know your take on this particular aspect. Take care. Thank you. I will admit, Alejandro, I mean, you know, certainly I think we all got a big, huge buzz out of Randy Moss when it was learned right after the draft that he was coming. And the Patriots traded for Wes Welker in one of those, hey, can't beat him, join him kind of scenarios. Patriots said that Wes Welker was the one receiver last year they had the most trouble covering. So what do? They go and sign him in the offseason. Great move. Great move. And then when Adalys Thomas was acquired, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. Boy, do they can they really put a couple of bookends on the edge of that defense with a guy like Thomas and primarily Rosie Colvin? And then the thought is to put Thomas in the middle and put Vrabel on the edge. And I have to admit, I'm like Andy Hart, who I know has mentioned it here on PFW, and those guys, you know, as well, you know, chime in on this. I'm a little curious as to why we haven't seen Thomas on the edge. I thought that that would be a place where he would excel in particular. I mean, he's 270 pounds, and he's got speed. It's like having a freight train coming at you. Now, this is with no disrespect to Mike Vrabel, because I think we've seen that Vrabel is also very good when he's put on the edge, and that's it now. But I believe this to be partly because the Patriots feel like you are best learned in the schematics and the way that they want to operate their defense when a linebacker in particular starts in the middle and learns from the middle and grows inside out. I really don't think it's any more than that. And so Thomas right now is paired next to Bruschi because Thomas is probably in a position where he will, if not only share, maybe even eventually assume some of that play-calling ability from the middle of the Patriots defense. And if you have an understanding of the play-calling and you have an understanding of how things are in the middle, you have an easier time looking at things from the outside. So I really believe that the Patriots, and again, my own opinion here, is that they teach better when you learn from this position. And then once you have this position taken care of, the rest of the defense that you need to learn to make these calls comes naturally. I think that's how they look at it. And I would not at all be surprised to see Thomas, you know, coming from the edge at some point in time this season. Although I guess an argument could be made for, hey, if it ain't fixed, don't, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, so to speak. But, see, I also believe the Patriots preach versatility. You know this, Alejandro, and every Patriots fan knows that the Patriots thrive on having guys who can play multiple roles and perform in multiple situations. And so we assume Thomas is an edge guy, and here's a guy that's learning the middle. Why? So he can be overall more valuable to this defense. More valuable, if it's possible, to have a guy like Adalys Thomas more valuable. This makes him that. So there's my take on that particular subject. You know, don't be surprised if you see him on the edge, but don't be also surprised if he stays in the middle. Because if it ain't broke, they're not going to fix it. Alex sends this note. He says, John, I watched the game on TV, and you can only see one portion of the field. But what kind of coverage were the Jets playing? Because Brady seemed to be standing forever in the pocket. Or is it just good play by the offensive line? The Jets had a lot of single coverage on the receivers. I think they played a lot of man. I don't know that I noticed any zone, to be honest with you. Now, I'm like you, and unless I'm like doing analysis of the game or unless I'm looking at game film to scout for an upcoming opponent, I'm watching the football. And because I was busy watching, you know, what the cameras would allow us to watch. Sometimes, you know, you want to watch a receiver run downfield, but the camera isn't going to follow the receiver. Camera's going to follow the flight of the ball. So, unfortunately, not being at the game in person, it's difficult for me to see a lot of the coverage. But what I did see, it looked like they were in a lot of man situations, and the Patriots receivers just flat out whipped them. If it was zone, it was poor. Poor zone. But it looked like most of the time it was in man coverage. Now, that 51-yarder to Moss, there was triple coverage back on him, and he still ran through it. So I think it's a combination of both, Alex. I do believe that the Jets played a lot of single coverage that they thought that they could get away with. and they obviously failed in that regard. And a lot of that is because, you know, I think that they did try to blitz on a couple of occasions, although they didn't blitz near as much as they did in the playoff game last January. No way. And I'm a little surprised that they didn't do that, but maybe they were sort of trying to outthink the Patriots, and obviously that failed miserably. And I do believe that the Patriots' offensive line did a great job. I don't want to underscore that too much. I mean, the fact is that, you know, the offensive line play is something that we tend to overlook, and they are certainly due credit where the credit is due. But I think we've come to expect that now from a group that's been together for a few years. You know, I was pleasantly surprised with the play of Ryan O'Callaghan, who came in many different situations, even came in as an extra receiver in short yardage situations, even though the ball was never thrown to him, but he was an eligible receiver. And I do think that the Patriots now are beginning to show some of the versatility that is also paying off on their offensive line. These guys are melding, you know, meshing together as a cohesive unit. That also spells trouble for the opposition. So other teams now are going to have to figure out a way. Well, we saw what the Jets did. That didn't work. Now what are we going to do? Are we going to really just pin our ears back and come after them with, you know, all sorts of blitzes? Well, if you do, that's fine. But keep in mind, the Patriots have a very good chance to burn you with the offensive receiving weapons that they now have. This is the conundrum facing coaches going against the Patriots' offense. This is a real problem. It'll be interesting to see how the Chargers do it. It'll be interesting to see how the Jets do it when they rematch. Interesting to see how the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Colts, and everybody else that's on the schedule, how they decide to defense the Patriots from here on out. We are at the end of the inaugural Patriots playbook for 2007. Woo-wee! Thank you. It's great to be back on Patriots.com radio for another season. And it's great to be back talking with you on weekdays here via email and the phone. Tomorrow's program at 2 p.m. Eastern Time will feature Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune, Chargers beat writer. It will also feature exclusive sound from the Patriots locker room from your players. You're only going to get it if you log in here, Patriots.com, and tune into Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Thanks, Gary Gradecki. Good to be back with you, pal. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, mañana.